to let kids learn online or not let kids learn online? That is the question, to sort of paraphrase Shakespeare. Online homeschooling programs are popping up like dandelions, just like they pop up on my lawn in May, really bad. The idea can be somewhat tempting. You stick the kids in front of the screen and you can have a clean house and folded laundry. But is it a good idea? Let's take a look at that today.
Hello, and welcome to the Stay at Homeschooling Moms podcast. My name is Mary Ellen Barrett, and I am being joined by my dear friend, Ginny Sufer. And we are here to tackle the pros and cons of homeschooling online. But first, let's thank our sponsor, Seton Home Study School. Seton has been a leader in Catholic education for 40 years now, providing books, counseling, grading, and testing materials to help parents provide a superior Catholic education for their children. Seton enrollment is affordable, flexible, and comprehensive. So check it out. Their website is www.setonhome.org, and all the information you're going to need is right there. So let's talk about online learning, Ginny.
Well, I think we have to kind of break it up. There is a difference between the little kids, you know, preschool, primary grades, and then as they get older. So sure. I think if we first talk about the preschool and the primary grades up to grade three or something like that, I have to say, with maybe a few exceptions, we'll talk about it in a minute. I just give that a thumbs down. I really do. Kids this age have to be outside. They have to be sniffing flowers and chasing bunnies. And that's how they develop imagination and how they observational skills and communication skills, because they come in and they told you, "Mommy, I saw this bunny," and the bunny, you know, hopped into a hole or something like that. Occasionally, but they develop everything. They see it, they hear it, they smell it, they taste it, they touch it, whatever. This is the best way that we know how to learn, multisensory learning. Sometimes your kids will be stuck in the house. Well, they can't go outside and play. You know, it's 30 below zero out there and the snow is up to their eyeballs. Okay, well, then don't put them in front of a screen. Give them Legos or blocks or a whiteboard with markers, but not a screen. I mean, kids, really, as little screen time as is possible. I can't stress that enough, in my opinion. And unfortunately, we see that sometimes second graders have smartphones now.
Oh, and that's very common.
And they're sitting in a restaurant with their parents, and they're not even participating in conversation.
I see that a lot. That always makes me feel bad. There's a baby with a tablet propped up in front of them, you know, in restaurants or in libraries or in church. And it's hard to go a whole month without hearing another published study saying children should not be exposed to screens at all for the first 5 years of their life.
Yeah.
You know, other than the occasional probably bluey episode so mom can take a shower, you know, but like purposefully sitting them in front of a screen. If you put on a TV, like a bluey episode, I think it's 15 minutes. You put that on and you put the toddler somewhere safe and you go throw your laundry in, the toddler is not, doesn't always have to be entirely engaged in the screen. Sometimes they're playing with a ball. They have a book near them. They're doing other things. But if you just purposefully plant them in front of a tablet with nothing else to do, they're strapped in their high chair, it's just really bad for their brains. It's really, really bad for them.
And this is one of those things. It's kind of like drinking pop. I always joke about it that every diet from carnivore down to vegan tells you the first thing you should do is give up soda pop.
Yeah.
And nevertheless, people buy like this whole aisles of it in the store. Everything you see, no matter what the philosophy of raising children or educating children is, one of the first things they say is do not put young kids in front of screens, and people still do it.
They do. And I guess it's because people are so busy and they want the peace and quiet. But when it comes from the homeschool perspective, It will absolutely make it harder for them to acquire skills if they are looking at, if they're learning online before. I honestly didn't do much of it until like eighth grade. And even then, it was just like an enrichment kind of a class online. It wasn't something like they weren't taking math online. Actually online, they take teaching textbooks. They do math online. But it was something like, one of my kids took a ornithology, you know, bird study class
online. Something like that.
And there was a botany class, like the astronomy. I did things that they were interested in, and it was a once a week deal for 45 minutes. but never before that. Because I just think they don't learn to write. They don't learn to read well.
The writing is an issue. I have grandkids in high school, so I tend to see lots of people and their handwriting, you know, kids that age. These kids write like second graders when they're 15. I don't mean write like the words they're writing. I'm saying actually printing letters on a page. Nobody knows cursive anymore, so I'm definitely say printing.
Yeah.
It looks like chicken scratch. They literally cannot write. And I honestly believe that that's because I realize we type a lot more, or whatever you call keyboard, I guess now. But the fact is that they have to learn how to take pencil in hand, hold it the right way,
mm-hmm.
form letters.
It's a fine motor skill.
All sorts of other things happen. It's not just learning how to write so you can communicate. It's a fine motor skill. Those skills of thinking what you want to say, right? You know, taking the pen in hand, putting it on the paper, being able to read it. All sorts of things happen that are really, really good for them.
Yeah.
So they need a book for that. Don't give them a screen to learn their letters.
Yeah. It's a more thoughtful way to approach things. And we've been finding that with kids who type. Now, my 15-year-old's handwriting is a disaster, and he went through all those Seton books. But mostly like for assignments and stuff, he types, and they type all the time. So he didn't, right. I don't know, it didn't take somehow.
And that's going to be the new normal.
Yeah, it's just a disaster compared to my older children who have beautiful handwriting. Even my lefty has nicer handwriting than the younger kids do. But when you have a child actually write things down and think about what they're doing, it's better for their brains. Now that they type, everything has AI built into it. So they're typing, say they're typing a paper in Microsoft Word or in a Google Doc, and it's suggesting things to them. It's correcting their spelling. It's suggesting, hey, word it this way. Take this word out. Move it around. I mean, you could put a chimp in front of it and it's going to write a paper for you. It's absolutely scary. But when they actually have to handwrite for the first few years of them doing essays or book reports or whatever they're doing, they actually have to think.
Yeah.
They have to think, and they have to organize their thoughts, and they have to have a certain progression in something. Whereas now they just do it on screen and it almost does it for them without them even, I don't think they're even aware that it's kind of dishonest in a way. You know,
well,
I think a lot of kids have just, they've grown up with it.
Schools are dealing with this now because you can actually have AI write a paper for you. You know, you can write a fifth grade paper about Abraham Lincoln. Five paragraphs discussing his early life and his rise to the presidency, and AI will write a paper. So this is an issue that they're going to be dealing with, but I'm not convinced that even the kids that somehow know how to program an AI document, I mean, do they know how to write, how to cut and paste, how to turn pages, put stickers on something, grab a crayon to color, do something on a whiteboard, like put a presentation on a whiteboard. Can they do that? If they're called at the last minute to do it. You know, parents go crazy with learning styles. Some parents go really nuts with it. You know, my child's an auditory learner. My child's a visual learner, kinesthetic learner. Well, we're all multisensory learners.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of us. So kids have to have that, especially in the early years, they have to have a multisensory approach. And I go back, I am old enough to remember that when Sesame Street came on, it was 1969.
I know. Yes, I was a Sesame Street kid.
And it was, and in those days, I think it became a little more controversial through the years. But in those days, it was just basically, you know, some cartoon character going, A, A, A. And, you know, they'd see a letter A and sing a song about A. And parents, oh, wow, this is great. They're really going to learn their letters and numbers. I had a principal of my kid's Catholic school in New York. And she said when Sesame Street came in, she noticed reading readiness going way down of all things.
Yeah, which you wouldn't think would make sense.
I would have thought just the opposite. I mean, I didn't know my letters, or at least not how to read them and write them when I went into kindergarten. And she said, it's not that, she says, I can teach a monkey their letters and how to read and write them. She said, what the other skills, so what did parents give up when Sesame Street came on? They put their kid in front of the boob tube and they said, okay, you know, watch Sesame Street. You can learn all your letters and numbers. And they stopped doing things like Little Boy Blue, Come Blow Your Horn, The Sheep's in the Meadow, The Cows in the Corn.
Nursery rhymes, yeah. Nobody knows nursery rhymes anymore.
My mother read them to us. I mean, that's all you had in those days.
Yeah.
Very little TV. I'm really old. There was very little TV when I was a kid, and it was mostly pretty bad. And so parents read poems and stories. And the principal, who was a genius at education, in my mind, what a wonderful woman she was, she said that rhyming is one of the first regular patterns of language that kids learn.
Yeah, it's extremely important.
They didn't learn how to rhyme when they were little. They knew how to write the letter A, or they could write A-T. They might know at, but they didn't know at and bat and mat and cat and sat and hat. And
right, yeah.
That, she said she noticed a huge reduction in reading readiness, even though they knew their letters and their numbers.
That's amazing. I wouldn't have thought of that, but yes, that rhyming thing is a big deal. And that's from poetry and nursery rhymes and funny little riddles and things like that, that kids learn that kind of stuff. And it does help you with reading those sounds and those phonetics.
Yeah. And the vocabulary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the vocabulary, some of which is, sort of old fashioned, and you'd have to explain to a kid, well, this is the way they used to say things even before right. mommy was born. Is that, she said they lost so much. She said they definitely were less ready to learn how to read. Isn't that interesting?
That is. That makes me so happy. Seton just came out with a kindergarten art and poetry book. And if you're enrolled, it's a piece of art paired up with a nursery rhyme or a little piece of poetry that kind of relates. But if you're enrolled, you get all these lesson plans that show you how to work with the child in the rhyme, and there's little finger play and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't realize how much of that was important to being able to read. Yep. Like, you wouldn't think the itsy bitsy spider mattered to reading, but it kind of does. And if you're not going to get that in front of the screen. Yeah.
Nope. You're not going to. So I thought that was really interesting. So the question, talking about these younger kids again, maybe up till third or fourth grade, is online education ever appropriate for them? And you kind of brought up something before, the idea of enrichment. Mm-hmm. It's a safety issue too. So say your kid is really interested in bees. They read something about bees and honey in one of their reading books. And well, you're not going to go really look at a bee's nest. Take it. It's probably not a good idea. Don't do that. But you can get online and you can find some sort of short documentary about bees with the inside of a bee's nest. So sure, something like that you can do. Although I might suggest to you that you might be better off going to the public library and get all the books on bees they have.
Yeah. Yes and no. And just, this is a very kind of personal experience I've had. We recently had our library here in our village renovated, and it's beautiful. They had to make it handicap compliant, and they had to put more bathrooms in. So they had, there were, and the wiring wasn't set up for Wi-Fi and stuff like that. It was a really old building. So they redid it. It's beautiful. What they forgot to put in it are books.
Oh, sorry.
There's just so few books. So you go on the website and say, oh, I want to reserve this book. And sometimes it's homeschool stuff. And sometimes it's just, you know, a novel you want to read. Right. And no, it's only an ebook, only available as an ebook. And I'm a person who enjoys like the physicality of a book.
I like to turn a page myself. Yes. Yeah, I do too.
So ebooks are fine. Like, I take them on the plane. I take my Kindle on the plane. It's great when you're packing, but I like a book. And so I was complaining about this, because I complain about things, with a group of homeschool moms from all different places around here on Long Island. And same thing, that like the libraries are emptying of books, unless of course it's Pride Month.
Right. Books all over.
Don't go in June. And there's just, ebook is becoming the only thing, or audiobooks. And I love audiobooks. I listen to them all the time when I'm out in my garden, when I'm taking my walk, you know, that kind of thing. But I like a book. And to have a little kid, like if he wants to learn about bees, you need to have the book, right? You can't have
so
a six-year-old.
Don't even tell me that. That's so sad.
It is. It's so true in the bigger cities. And that
I live in rural Kentucky, where we still have a library with books. It's very nice.
There are more empty shelves than there are full shelves in this beautiful big library that we have. It's just heartbreaking to me. But anyway, yeah. So I agree with you that it's better to go get the book if you can find the book. But if you can't, watching the YouTube video about whatever it is the kid is interested in, right, or using it like on Martin Luther King Day, I put on his speech.
I've Got a Dream.
I've Got a Dream speech. And we've listened to different things like that, like historic events you can see on.
I've gotten that too.
Yeah. And that's really important.
In science, when we were talking about tsunamis, you can actually see like the Japanese tsunami.
Right. Yeah.
Several years ago, and the kid. So that sort of thing. Yeah, enrichment, it's worth it for enrichment. And the other thing, the only thing I would say that you really can't do any other way, if you want your child to become bilingual, unless you speak the language yourself, you really have to have some sort of video help.
Right. You can't learn it out of a book. Nobody's learning Polish out of a book. You can't
learn Polish out of a book. Now, you might have a Polish grandma and she would love to, but unless she's there every single day, kids don't learn another language.
Yeah, that's true.
So it might be a good idea to have Junior, you know, sit in front of I think Little Pim was the one I used, put out by the Pimsleur Company, but there's loads of them. That you could get from your library, probably for free. Mm. Some sort of little videos that teach the kids, you know, la pomme, the apple, la table, the table, la pomme sur la table, the apple is on the table. And kids will pick it up, and they'll pick it up quickly when they're little.
Yeah.
So that to me is a great idea. I have one granddaughter. My son married a Chinese woman when he was living in China. He was a teacher in China. And their little girl lived there till she was, I want to say, 4. So she's completely fluent in English and Chinese. They have another little girl that was born in the United States. Mom speaks Chinese to her, but, you know, it's not the constant thing. So the kid is not nearly as good. So foreign language is something where I'd say the more exposure the child gets, if you really want a kid to be bilingual, maybe because the child is Chinese and we're going to go to China and I want you to be able to speak to your grandma in China.
Yeah. No, that's an exception, but that's also a very specific thing. Like the child isn't sitting there hour after hour, you know, for a whole school day learning everything online. Like it has a place. The online learning definitely has a place. But for the most part, for these younger years, it should be as minimal as possible.
Yeah. Thumbs down. Now, how about middle school and high school? So we've just said, well, all right, as they get older, we're going to do it. Let's talk about why they shouldn't do it first. As far as
we're doing a pro-con thing here.
Yeah, pro-con. These are the cons first. And now we're talking again. We've gotten past the little kids. We're going into middle and high schoolers. And I think the first con is when you're at home, you're interacting with your parents and your siblings and your friends from the co-op, co-workers that they have a job when they're in high school. We know for a fact that it's psychologically unhealthy to be isolated. Mm-hmm. And we know that the generation that we're living in now is more diagnosed mental illness, higher suicide rates than any before it. Human beings are social creatures. And social creature does not mean you are interacting with people on Facebook or whatever, TikTok or whatever it is. It means you are actually dealing with other people. There's a guy who wrote a book called The Blue Zones. And basically it's about parts of the world where people live to be 100 years old and in blooming health. And one of the it's not just, you know, what you eat and whether you exercise. A big thing is interacting with other human beings.
Right.
We are social creatures.
Yeah. Most people are happier when they have social interaction. And speaking as somebody who's kind of introverted too, like social activity drains me a little bit, but I still need to talk to people.
You do.
You still need to interact with the world. You still have to have these skills and you're happier when you're more involved in your community, in your church, in your homeschool group.
It could just be you walk your dog around the block and you run into your neighbor and you say, oh my goodness, how your kids are getting so big. And what's your name again? It doesn't have to be deep, thoughtful.
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it is better for your mental health, especially for those teenagers. I mean, they get so easily addicted to this stuff, you know, so could an online class be a gateway to something else? I know a lot, my kids' experience with some of the online classes they've taken is that there's often like a chat where the kids can chat to each other during the class where they pop up a Discord. They'll create a Discord, which is like an online kind of messaging service, which is often used just for video games, but you can make a Discord for anything. So they'll create a Discord for the class and then they're talking. And now suddenly there's a social component to it where his mom is thinking, oh, he's just learning about astronomy. Oh, and now they're talking and now maybe they're talking about video games and now maybe they're playing video games together. And suddenly, boom, 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 it's this whole culture. Was this cute little astronomy class the gateway to them just staring at a screen all night? You know, you have to be really careful and really vigilant about that kind of stuff. And gosh, it's exhausting.
one of the suggestions that I've heard made, and it kind of works sometimes, but certainly up into a certain age, these kids have to have the computers in a public place.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
They have to be sitting at the dining room table. They cannot be up in their rooms with the door closed. That the other thing that we should talk about a little more before I moved to nowhere where I live now, very rural. I lived in the city and I lived maybe two blocks from a big public park that was right near the high school. And after school, you would see the kids sitting. Some of them were waiting for buses. Some of them were just hanging around. They weren't talking to each other.
Yeah.
They had their phones up and all they were doing was scrolling through their phones. They were not even talking. And what we've discovered with this particular generation, like they're not getting married now until they're 30 years old. And one of the reasons is they don't know how to communicate.
Communication is a huge problem. It really, really is. Now, I remember I went to a private all-girls Catholic high school, right? We thought it was prison. We absolutely thought it was prison. It wasn't, but it was... We could not wait to get out of there and stand on the bus, stand out in front, because everybody had like a spot, like this bus comes to this spot, this, you know, in front of the school, in front of the campus. We couldn't wait to get out there and just chat about the day. And like you meet up with your friends and you know, it was this big social gathering while you're waiting for the buses to come. And now you see that, like what you described, kids are standing there and they're all staring at their phones.
Yeah,
they're not talking to each other. They're not sharing their experience. They're not.
So apart from that, apart from the obvious, we've already said it's psychologically unhealthy. Communication is absolutely necessary for your life. You have to be able to walk in and say, "Hi, I'm Jenny Suford, and I'm here representing Seton Home Study School."
Yeah, you have to be able to read people's expressions and to all that stuff. It's
they don't know how to get jobs now.
Yeah. Well, goodness gracious, it's terrible.
No, they struggle to get jobs. They have no idea how to get a job. There was a woman, I think it was at Boston College, but I hope she forgives me if it was not, who did something. She was a sociology professor, and she started something called the Dating Project, because what she found was her students, she talked to the seniors, they're getting out, oh, anybody getting married? You know, I mean, that would be an obvious time. You're getting out of college, you get married. No more. They don't even date. They don't have girlfriends or boyfriends.
Yeah, they have no interest in that.
Well, it's not that they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to go up to a girl and say, hey, that was an interesting class. You want to go get a cup of coffee?
Oh, yeah. That would never happen now.
No, they have no idea.
It just never happened. It's just not part of their culture. It's not part of the world that we live in now. It is so bizarre to me. It drives my husband insane.
I'm with Dave. I'll tell you, it drives me insane too. They have no idea how to do. They can't get jobs. They can't get dates. They have no idea how to just simple social interactions that are absolutely necessary. You don't have to be a gregarious person. As you say, some people are shy. They're a little bit backward, whatever. But those are the ones who actually need it more.
Probably, yeah, they need it more. It's and the online learning just contributes to that. The phone is certainly, the smartphones are certainly the biggest cause of that kind of breakdown in communication. But online classes, if you do it entirely all the time, that could be a con of it, is that it could be the kind of the gateway drug to just...
Especially if they're recorded classes. Maybe if you have interaction with other people, you know, there are live classes. Maybe that's a little bit better, you have interaction. But it's nothing like even in the classroom, the prison that you talked about, because I went to Catholic school too, and we called it a prison too. But you always would say, do you believe what she's wearing today? we did interact all day, and you had to be able to go up to that teacher, even if you couldn't stand that teacher, you had to be able to go up and say, you know, I really wanted to talk to you about my test or my essay, because I thought I was doing better than I was. You had to be able to make your point of view to another human being.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are really important life skills. And so if you are going to sign them up for online classes or online school, in middle school and high school. And I get why, because, you know, math is hard, science is hard, grammar is hard, all those things. And maybe you're working and it's hard. It's just all hard. You really have to be vigilant about how much they're interacting online, what they're doing online. The computer has to be somewhere where you can see it, check their history. And you might have the most trustworthy kid in the world. And I've done all of this. I've policed my kids and my kids have never violated my trust that way. But you also don't know who's on the other end.
Right.
And that's the worrisome thing. I didn't really worry about my kids doing anything terrible online because, I don't know, I just didn't, because I trusted them and they'd never violated my trust. So I didn't, as time went on, I was less and less worried about that. I was worried more about who was on the other end of these interactions. So even video games and stuff like that, you just have to be so careful. And it's just something that has to be monitored a lot. And as homeschool moms and working moms, it's just another layer of stuff you have to do. Just more work.
I know it is. the other con of online is there's something to be said for discussion, and it goes on in classrooms. That's an advantage of school, is they have, well, although now they're doing an awful lot of schooling online, even if you're in a classroom, there's a Chromebook open up in front of you. But one of the big benefits that we used to have is you discuss things. The kids are reading Jane Eyre. Why was Mr. Rochester so bitter? I found something really interesting when I was learning about space exploration. Do you know how they found like the planet Neptune and Uranus?
No.
I just think they saw it one day in a telescope. Telescopes got better and they found it.
That's what I would have assumed.
That's what I always thought my whole life until I was like in my 60s or something. And then I discovered that what happened was they would see, so Saturn all of a sudden would have like a little jolt, a little teeny jolt, a little jiggle as it was revolving around the sun. And that had to be because some other large planetary body was exerting gravitational pull on it.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
And then, isn't it? And then using math, the kind of math that I said, what am I ever going to do with this? I don't need to learn this. Using that math, remember the one you used in trigonometry?
Yeah.
They figured out, well, using the law of universal gravitation, and they were able to figure out, well, if there is a body exerting gravitational pull on it, and we can say that it's going to be here, and that's how they were able to zero in on it and find it.
Wow, that's really fascinating. That's really interesting. I really thought it was some guy in a telescope.
They got better telescopes. So discussions like that, to bring that up, and all of a sudden maybe kid will become a little more interested in that trigonometry that he's so bored with. When the Dobbs decision came down, you know, my dad, when I was a little girl, worked for the Associated Press.
Oh.
Everybody's heard about 30 Rock. My dad worked at 50 Rock. And so his business was actually news.
Right. So I bet he knew everything then and current events. So it was probably a big deal in your house.
It was a huge deal in our house. And we would actually sit there and discuss these things.
Yeah.
And at the dinner table, again, no books or phone, you know, Chromebooks open or phones open at the dinner table. The best online classes limit discussion. Homeschooling allows us to bring these topics to the dinner table, to the coffee, when we're sitting outside on the porch after dinner. That cannot be minimized. I think it's really, really important. It's something we've lost in our society.
True. The dinner table discussion we just had it Saturday night with all my kids. We were discussing the upcoming election and things like that, current events, things that were happening in the world. And because now they're mostly adults, and it was interesting to hear their perspectives and what they're getting out of all this campaign stuff. And so those kinds of discussions will keep going if you start that habit early, in your school life. And, you know, those kinds of things. And they're really important to the solidarity and culture of your family. But I think we need to take a break, don't we? I mean,
we've gone on and on and on. So we are going to discuss why you might want to use online classes for your older kids. But before we do that, Seton is our primary sponsor, but we have other sponsors who we are very grateful to. So why don't we take a short break and listen to a message from one of them?
And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Benedictine College. Benedictine College is a Newman Guide school located in Atchison, Kansas. It is heir to the 1,500 years of Benedictine dedication to learning. Benedictine College mission as a Catholic Benedictine liberal arts residential college is the education of men and women within a community of faith and scholarship. There are over 50 undergraduate programs, 2 master's degree programs, and they are located on a beautiful, beautiful campus. Please check out their website at benedictine.edu for more information about student life, faith life, admissions, financial aid, athletics,
and a variety of other things. You can even schedule a visit to the campus on the website. So again, check them out at benedictine.edu. And thank you, Benedictine College, for sponsoring the Stay at Home Schooling Mom podcast.
Welcome back to the Stay at Home Schooling Mom podcast. I'm Mary Ellen Barrett, and Jenny Seufert and I are talking about online school, online classes for homeschoolers, pros and cons. So we just did a bunch of cons. We discussed early primary grades, I guess, in middle school and high school. And now let's do some pros. What are some pros, Jenny? What are some good things?
The fact is, the reason that everybody wants it, let's face it, is upper level math, upper level science, and foreign language.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's intimidating to address those things as a homeschool mom who maybe has no expertise in any of that.
Every time I talk to a mom about, like, some of the moms do dual enrollment and they're sending their kids to a local community college, mm-hmm. always to take physics.
Yeah. Nobody's sending them. Well, it's rare that they're taking history or something like that, that you're paying for that. Yeah, and it's funny you should mention dual enrollment. So many colleges now are online. Like, if you're doing dual enrollment, it's likely to be online now.
Right.
So, I mean, there's the pro to that. You're getting college credit. You're getting, the child is getting a professional education in something that maybe you have absolutely no expertise in. It's going to save you some money in the long run. So that is a big pro, particularly in high school. It really is.
It is. It absolutely is. And I think it'll allow more parents to continue homeschooling, because I've spoken to more than one homeschooling parent who was happy with homeschooling. They homeschooled all through grammar school. Kids going to go to the public high school. And I say, why? They were doing so well. Jenny, I can't teach. And it'll always be physics or math or a foreign language. I think they're very intimidated by it. I get it. I understand why. And certainly Seton now has switched over to teaching textbooks after my time was over. And a lot of parents just rave about it.
Oh, yeah. I've been using
that
now.
By the way, for those that don't know.
Yeah, I've been using it. I think it's like 17 years now, because Saxon, when I was homeschooling, I think I could not keep up with six Saxon different grading and books. And I just could not keep up with it. And so we switched to teaching textbooks before Seton took it on as like their main thing.
It's deeper now. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So. And it was life changing. To the whole homeschool, everybody was so much happier. And Katie, who my oldest daughter, was not a math student. She's just like her mother, God bless her, the poor thing. Just excelled, did really well on standardized testing. So in that regard, it was really life-changing. But teaching textbooks is a little bit of a different animal. It's not like you're being taught math, but it's not like a live course or something.
It's interactive.
Yeah. It's mildly interactive. It tells you when you've done something wrong and how you did it wrong, and gives you the opportunity to do it again. And then it shows you what you did wrong. So it's really good. It reinforces, and it's always going back to the previous lessons, and it's really good that way. But there's no like live teacher. There's no way to chat with anybody else. It used to be on CD-ROMs. I mean, I had like fourth grade through high school on CD-ROM, and now I guess it's just online. You get a code
online
and
base,
you go on. Yeah, it's online. So it was life changing for me. but that was a big pro for me.
And that is a biggie, and it is for a lot of people. And even before high school, some parents really struggle. There are very few advantages to being old. You look bad. You don't feel that well. But I knew how to diagram a sentence. I knew my parts of speech. I knew how to parse a noun, and I knew how to diagram a sentence.
Yeah. I think I'm the last generation that was really, really taught that heavily.
Yeah. The public high school where I lived before I moved here, they bragged about the fact that kids got out of high school not knowing the eight parts of speech.
Why would you brag about that?
Held them back because grammar holds kids back. Language is natural. They have to be, you know, writing and expressing themselves has to be a natural part of who they are. So they have no idea how to tell the difference between who and whom.
What kind of hippie commune were you living in?
It was like a hippie commune, to be honest with you. But this is all over the country. And virtually nobody knows how to diagram. And, you know, some of us who are older could roll our eyes and say, well, it's not that hard. You have to learn. But it's you're homeschooling four kids, and now all of a sudden they want you to be able to diagram compound, complex sentences. that's the time to get online.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it is, it's intimidating. It's time consuming. And maybe you weren't taught it that well, or maybe you're like me and your brain is shrinking daily and you've just forgotten some of it. It comes back to you, but it's not a skill. Diagramming sentences is really important for logic. It trains your ear to hear what's good writing and what's good speaking. So your children are much more likely to write well and to speak well, public speaking wise. But it's not something like you do every day. You know, when the kid says, oh, well, when am I going to use this again? You're using it without knowing you're using it once you've learned it. But to ask somebody 25 years later to diagram a big, long sentence, a compound sentence, is a very difficult thing to do.
So, or to ask somebody 25 years old to diagram at all when they have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. So that might be where your videos come in handy. I've resorted to Khan Academy more than once. Seton, if you're enrolled, you have this My Seton page and has resources. And there are a couple of diagramming videos on there that I've looked at. I'm sure there are other grammar things out there. Good grammar has to be taught. You can't just put the kid in front of a book, unfortunately. They have to be taught. So you have to teach it, or somebody has to teach it. And it's really, really important. I know it sounds like that natural language thing. That sounds lovely, except that good grammar really must be taught. Because when they're doing college essays, and when they're doing writing resumes, and when they're speaking and presenting in their business life, you can tell who had a good grammar education and who did not.
Yeah, you do have to know the difference between nominative and objective, even though it seems like, what do I need to know that for? But you do need to know it. And so obviously for things that just, you never learned it yourself, or you learned it 100 years ago and you just don't remember it, or frankly, things have changed too. Like I'm so old that quantum mechanics has changed tremendously.
You know, it's not just protons,
neutrons, and electrons anymore.
Right. Yeah. When there's new research in different subjects, new discoveries that we weren't taught, or, you know, when it comes to stuff like history, like there's a new war, a new country, like something's happening every day. So yeah, it's good to have somebody who can teach that with some expertise, which leads us to the next pro, right? Sometimes online classes give kids an opportunity to hear a lecture from a real subject master, like somebody who really knows their stuff, which would not always be me.
Right, me. and it could be strictly enrichment, but there are videos online. You have to be a little careful, know where they're coming from. That's why I think a lot of people try to stick to Catholic sources.
Sure.
To get a lecture about Shakespeare, for example, from a Joseph Pierce comes to mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you really want to look for, is a Joseph Pierce kind of thing, his Tolkien stuff, or even
Bishop Barron on religion.
Yeah. Can't go wrong there. Even like Hillsdale College has free courses on all kinds of history and law and stuff like that. And those are really, really good. And you're not going to get anything funky there. PragerU has a few of those kinds of things. Like you want to investigate. YouTube is great, but I always watch it first before I show it to the kids, because A, you don't know what kind of weirdo ad's going to come up. You just never know. Like even if it's a decent source, you just don't know what kind of ad they're going to stick in there. And secondly, if you don't like you put something in the search bar, say the Martin Luther King speech, and you click on it, it could be from a news source, or it could be from somebody else who posted it and has commentary, and you just never know. So I always watch it all first. So YouTube is a great, great research, but you just have to be a little bit careful about where it's coming from.
A great point. But used properly, it can give kids a broader perspective on subjects that you want them to have a broad perspective on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but I think even when it comes to the older kids, the takeaway from this is there's some cons, there's some pros. There's certainly reasons in the upper grades to use online resources, but you never want to entirely get away from that personal mom and dad and grandma and grandpa are teaching and discussing and education. You still want it to be homeschool personal.
Yeah, you do. And one of the reasons why we choose this wacky lifestyle is for the relationships we're building and the family culture that we're building and the Catholic culture that we're building. And that's just not going to translate through an entirely online curriculum. Yeah. So it's really important to build those relationships.
Well, just to finish up today, some of you who listen to us all the time, maybe you didn't listen to this particular one, but apparently it was very well received. Keeping chickens. A lot of homeschoolers want chickens now. And we've had a lady, Dalia Monterosso,
yes,
on the show, who had written a book called Let's All Keep Chickens.
She was delightful.
She was really interesting, a lot of fun. And anyhow, she agreed to send a book to a reader, or to a listener, I should say, to a listener, so they could become a reader. The book was Let's All Keep Chickens. And congratulations to Chris Lett, who won the book.
She did. And we sent, Dalia sent out that book to her, and I hope she enjoys it. And Chris Lett, if you feel like commenting on your chicken journey on the Facebook page, we really want to know. We're very curious. And speaking of the Facebook page, please go on over there. If you have any questions you want to ask us, any ideas for topics, Ginny and I check on that page every day, and our social media person, Beth Egan, is over there quite a bit. So we would be delighted to hear your questions, and we would be delighted to answer them here online. So anything homeschool, Catholic family life, anything you think we might have some wisdom on, although why you would think that, I don't know.
But I was just going to say, let's see if we can express that differently. But certainly if you're interested in hearing what two people who have a lot of experience in homeschooling might have to say about it, please, post your questions. We'll be happy to address them in the future. And now, as we wrap up, we just have to thank Seton Home Study School, our primary sponsor, and the team that's behind us. You already mentioned Beth Egan, our social media person, Jason Lowry, our producer, and Jim Shanley, who saves us by putting up the program notes that we would never be able to get ourselves together enough to do. So thank you. Thank you to them, and thank you to you for listening.
Yes, God bless you, and we'll see you in 2 weeks on a Wednesday.